This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Chrissa Georgia. How are you, Chrissa?
Hi, Chris. Nice to be here.
The video talks about 10 indigenous grape varieties, and they claim that they were indigenous to Crete, although I wasn't quite sure because they seem, some of those grape varieties were quite small plots of grapes. They're not really very common even in Crete. So are these grape varieties historically grown in other regions? Or I know in the video they talk about people coming to the island to grab the grapes and grow them in different parts of Greece. Before modern times, have they been grown in other parts of Greece as well?
So I'm going to take you back in a journey to 3,000 years BC.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about the Minoan civilization that flourished in Crete. And that's the first time we see a symbol that is dedicated to wine. We can only tell based on the archaeological findings. Of course, we cannot prove it was the same varieties that were being cultivated back then that are what we have now. But the earliest, more scientific proof that we have is 12th to 13th century, where we have different, we would call them wine travelers now, but back then they were people who were traveling the world and taking notes and sharing it that through books. So explorers, we call them explorers now. So we have notes on the grape varieties starting the 12th century, and they mention the varieties that we have now. Some of them have the same name, exactly the same name, and language is also very helpful to trace back what it used to be back then. But the idea is that because of the Minoan civilization, it was a civilization that was based in imports, exports. So they had boats. They were traveling to different areas. So we can only assume that they were also exchanging, probably getting plantings from other regions and planting to Crete. And then we have the long history of different invaders in Greece. We have the Venetians. We have a small period with the Arabs, and we have the Turks. And then 1913, Crete became part of the rest of Greece. And, you know, then came Phylloxera. So it's been a turbulent journey, especially because of the geopolitical place of Crete, right in the middle of the Mediterranean. So we can only assume. There are, of course, the University of Oenology in Athens is doing great work with actual scientific procedures to prove and trace back the origins of different varietals.
Have they done any DNA fingerprinting to see? And what was the upshot of that?
That's what we followed with the documentary, their DNA findings. The problem they told me about certain varieties is that there are different clones within a variety. For example, the variety Malvasia dicandia. They cannot really prove that it's Italian or Greek per se, because people are testing with different clones. So you can never really tell 100% this is what it is.
Yeah. But normally you can tell, like some of the work being done, they identify the parentage of different grape varieties. And if the parentage is known only in Mesopotamia, say, then it's probably from Mesopotamia, if you know what I mean. So none of that sort of thing was...
Yes, exactly. It has been mainly in Crete. And then they have found different clones of that variety in other parts of Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Italy, we have
France,
we have,
Yeah, there's some grape varieties I recognize as Muscats. I think you mentioned, was it Muscat in the documentary?
Yes, there is a Muscat.
Yeah,
there
are a huge family of grape varieties as well.
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. And tell me, in the documentary, there was 10 grape varieties. I'll get you to rattle them off. Go on, say your 10 grape varieties.
Oh my goodness! Let's start counting. Okay, let's start with the whites. Your listeners are gonna have a blast during that part because it's Greek words.
I know. And it's all Greek to me, mate.
Okay. So we have Vidiano, which is one of my favorite white grape varieties. Villana. Daphne, which it's a really peculiar name because the name gives, it means the bay leaf. And it really smells like bay leaf.
Oh, okay.
Plito, Thrapsathyri. I'm still in the whites. Muscat of Spina. And then we go into the reds. Mandilari, which is a great variety that we find all over the Aegean islands. Kotsifali. Liatiko, one of my favorite grape varieties. Liatiko is very close to what a Burgundian wine would feel like.
Okay.
Romeiko. And I guess that's it.
Okay. In the WC Level 3 course, they cover three grape varieties, Kisne Mavro, Aioietiko, and Assyrtiko.
Assyrtiko, yes.
Yes. In the video, they talked about being quite windy, and Assyrtiko is quite well adapted to the wind. So do you see things like, well, Kisne Mavro or Assyrtiko or Aioietiko growing there?
We see a lot of Assyrtiko growing in Crete, and especially I would recommend people try the Assyrtiko in the east coast of Crete. Because there we have sandy soils and very windy conditions, which are really similar to what we experience in Santorini.
Mm.
Everybody knows a Santorini Assyrtiko.
Yeah.
And I think, yes, try Assyrtiko from other regions. But I think the variety that you have to remember when it comes to Crete, I think that's Vidiano, another white grape variety that produces amazing wines.
Is there quite good volumes of it? Because some of the grape varieties in the documentary were grown by one or two people, really. They weren't big volumes. What do you say? Vidiano.
Vidiano. Vidiano.
Vidiano.
Very good. So, yes, that's all over the island. And now it's being explored in other regions as well. Australia is one of them. Vidiano is drought and heat resistant, so it's very, very useful for regions that are dealing with those kinds of conditions.
That was actually one of the topics in the video you covered for a bit, was about climate change. Because Crete is really on that sort of boundary about where sensible grapes can be grown. You can grow grapes anywhere if you want, but you can't necessarily grow them commercially in these places. So Crete seems to be right on that boundary of commercial winemaking. You talked a lot about climate change, but what's your take on that?
We can no longer talk about wine without talking about the change in climate. And although in certain parts of the world that can be very political, it is what we experience all over the world. So, yes, I wanted to ask the wine growers, well, do you experience climate change? And how do you experience climate change? And in the film, you can see that half of them, they feel like there is climate change and there are challenges. And the others were like, no, it's cool. It's fine. And in the beginning, I thought, well, maybe they don't want to badmouth Crete. That's why they have such a difference of opinions, even though it's one island. But then I realized, because of the microclimates of Crete and the spine of mountains, that people experience a great variation when it comes to climate.
Mm. One of your people said that it was about 1 degree Celsius higher now compared to 30 years ago. And that's quite a bit for it. And usually, if you're in France or something like that, you just move to a different grape variety that's better adapted to that climate. But are there grape varieties you think that are currently in Crete that are well adapted and will deal with another degree or two in temperature rise?
They are. And we have a lot of old vines in Crete still that are up there in the mountains, forgotten, and they still manage. What doesn't really work anymore as well as it used to be in Crete is the international grape varieties, where they're not as well adapted to that climate. They're not native to the land. So they are dealing with a lot of problems. Most of the producers for the past 10, 20 years have turned to native grape varieties, to Crete, to compensate for that extreme weather events.
You were saying earlier about Assyrtiko being grown there, but what about Kisno Mavro or Aliyetiko? Are they grown there as well?
No, not Kisno Mavro, not Aliyetiko, not at all.
you pronounce it much better than me. At least you know what I'm talking about.
I always have this, I wonder whether it's better to pronounce a variety based on the language that is being spoken. For example, do I say Pinot Noir or Pinot Noir? Do I say Kisno Mavro or do I say Kisno Mavro? That is what everybody else in the world would call it, right? I don't know what's the right thing to say.
Yeah. Well, I call it Kisno Mavro, so that's, there you go. I've got it completely wrong. Kisno Mavro. Okay. We were touching a wee bit earlier on phylloxera. You were talking about the history of Crete and, you know, it was producing a decent amount of wine in the Middle Ages. And then was it the Arabs who, Muslims?
The Ottomans.
Yeah, the Ottomans. And then no more production. Although one of the monasteries seemed to think they were producing wine through that period. So I was a little bit confused about whether there was.
With the Ottoman occupation in Crete, they had some special treatment when it came to different monasteries. So they allowed them to continue cultivating the land and the vines. But
most of production was stopped, really. And only when did it come back again?
So that happened between 1669 until Crete was reunited with Greece in 1913.
Yeah, the collapse of the Ottoman Empire after World War One.
Yes.
Because I was wondering where all the vine material came from, if it had stopped during the Ottoman reign. But obviously the monasteries had some vine material there.
And also the people of Crete are quite rebellious, so they kept doing it despite the prohibition.
Yeah, no, that's almost certainly true. Okay. And tell me, if I was a tourist coming to Crete for a holiday, where should I be going to find a good range and a selection of wines, for native wines?
First of all, you have to rent a car. So you land in Crete from Athens, and you will most likely land in Heraklion, the capital of Crete. You rent a car, and you go in the mainland of Heraklion, where you will see... It's the most production of wine in the mainland of Heraklion. And then you will spend maybe 2 days there. Also, if you like archaeology, you explore the Palace of Knossos and the Minoan civilization, the remnants of all that civilization. And then you'll go to Sitia, which is the east part of Crete. And I recommend you go to the Toplu Monastery. It's a monastery that has been making wine for centuries. They have some really unique climatic conditions that whatever you taste in the mainland of Heraklion, in the center of Crete, that will be so different. The climate can be characterized as really, really dry in Sitia, and the winds are brutal there if you go in the summer. But they also have these really interesting sandy soils that we can find a lot of Prephylloxera vines there. So you have a lot more concentration in flavor and a lot fuller wines. Smaller yields, but that makes for really interesting wines.
It's unusual because sandy soil's fine. Phylloxera doesn't like sandy soil, so you can grow them on your native roots, which is fine. You see that all over the world with sandy soils. But typically, I normally think of sandy soils as being lighter in style. If you look at, say, something from like a Cabernet Franc from Bourget versus Chenon. You know, Chenon tends to be the sandy soils, Bourget up on the hills, which is more limestone, and you find that the sandier soils tend to be lighter. Same in central Otago with the Pinot Noirs. The entry level Pinots from there tend to be on sandy soils, and they're lighter in style. So it's unusual that you say they're more flavoursome and concentrated. Do you think that's part of the dehydration from the wind?
I think that's part of the dehydration and also how old the vines are. We're talking about more than 100 years old, so that tends to produce a lot less, but a lot more concentrated.
Okay.
And then you go, you take your car and you go to the west of Crete, where we have amazing beaches, and you can enjoy the sea and the sun, and also do a few wine tasting experiences on the west as well.
Oh, you can't do that ever?
Yeah. All over. No. The wine tasting is all over. In the west, you have to compete between the sea and the sun, because the water there is just spectacular, and your wine related interests. Cool. So if you go to Crete, you have to go to the water. You know, it's not just wine.
Yeah, it's sailing as well. Most people talk about sailing, to be honest.
Oh yes.
Sailing in the Mediterranean. Okay, then I think what we're going to do, Krista, is we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. Cool. It has been fun, and it's incredible that I talk to your podcast, the podcast that helped me go through WSET3 and now my diploma.
Okay.
So
good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck for the level four. It's hard work.